that made me.
You're listening to Sunday Extra on RN. I'm Hugh Remington. Now, Craig Foster was an Australian football player, at one point the captain of the Socceroos, before his playing career was eclipsed by his work as a leading football commentator, which itself has been somewhat eclipsed in recent times by his profile as a human rights advocate. Most notably, Craig Foster led the international campaign to secure the freedom of the Melbourne-based footballer Hakeem Al-Arabi, who you might recall was detained in Thailand, awaiting extradition to Bahrain, the Gulf state he had fled. Well, having found his voice on human rights issues, Craig Foster has been using it, arguing in an open letter to Scott Morrison and Bill Shorten before the recent election that Australia has, quote, strayed too far from our basic values of humanity. Craig Foster, welcome to the year that made me.
Yes, thank you, Hugh. Nice to be with you.
Where does this advocacy come from?
I think a sense of fairness and equality and opportunity for everyone has always been a part of my life, certainly been a part of my family, and I think it's articulated through sport, and particularly team sport is about always standing up for the smallest team member, certainly captaincy is. So following retirement, before I moved into commentary, as you say, with SBS, I was already spending, and subsequently I spent many years working with Indigenous kids, refugee kids, children who are marginalised, who lack the opportunity that I've been given. I've had a privileged life. I didn't come from privilege, but I've had a very privileged life through sport, and that I need to make sure that I extend my hand to others.
Tell us about your upbringing.
I would say very typical of a country family. You know, I come from Lismore in country northern New South Wales, and, you know, not tremendous means. We had three brothers, very sport-focused country in the 70s, early 80s to mid-80s. Country regions were producing a lot of great sports people back then. Access was important both to multi-sports but also low-cost access, which is also really important to me. You know, we were a family where my father worked extremely hard as a mechanic, and he ended up having his own business. My mother had to go back in her late 30s, early 40s, back to work in order to support three boys who were increasingly achieving on a national, international scale through football, and that's costly. And if we had to pay in those years the fees that people have to absorb today as just either normal players or certainly elite players, we would have been in deep, deep trouble.
So are you saying that a young Craig Foster now, with your background, would struggle to achieve what you achieved because it's the obstacles are getting higher, the financial obstacles are getting higher?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. One of the big challenges we have in sport across the nation, given the social value that it has, but particularly our sport where costs continue to rise.
But this is a strange thing because we see these enormous, with the big sports, we see these enormous contracts are being written. It is one of the few areas left where, for example, TV networks are willing to spend a lot of money to get live sport. Why is that not bringing down the entry cost for kids?
Well, you might argue in AFL, for instance, that it has done so because the quantum of their television contract has meant that they're able to subsidise a lot of youth football, and that's given them an opportunity to grow in scale as well. Our game is a little bit different. We continue to grow in numbers, but for whatever reason, I think one of the reasons is our federated system. So we have a bottom-up approach still in Australian football rather than a top-down approach. That's the dream, and it's something that our game should be committed to. And that's one of the reasons why I've worked for so long with these minority and marginalised communities, because they simply can't afford to play. To see kids who would not otherwise have a chance even to play, they don't have boots. They certainly can't afford the fees. To then be given an opportunity to go into an environment where their talent can be recognised and furthered is difficult, but it's very rewarding. And it's challenging. It's a challenge to me to give more, as much time as I can. It's a challenge to me to continue to try and raise funds for them. But it's also a big challenge to the game and I think to the country, because the right to play is part of the Convention on the Rights of Children globally under the UN. And I think along with basic services in a country, we should be able to provide the right to play and the right to excel in sport because of the social, the health, the well-being benefits to the country, aside from to the individuals.
And does, that applies presumably equally to girls?
Oh, of course, yeah. It's, everything applies equally to females.
Do you think that the structures are there on the same level, the ground level? Are you seeing that that equality works in practice and giving opportunities to young girls who want to play soccer?
No, but I'm seeing an increasing commitment to it. I think sports are increasingly focusing on it, perhaps for many because they have to, because the movement is taking them in that direction. Where there's been very limited commitment to it, I think probably at government level all the way down through sport, there's a social issue, is around governance positions for women and influencing decision-making and participating at the decision-making tables. And in Australia, in our game in particular, we have very low levels. I think it's less than 10% right across the game of females sitting at boardroom tables within the game, and that needs to change.
Speaking of change, David Gallop has resigned, effective at the end of the year. He's given a bit of notice as the essentially the commissar of football in Australia. What does Australian football need post-World Cup to grow and become the force that everyone knows that it could be?
That's the question that this current board will have to answer really cleverly, I think. And what's good about the announcement is that it does give significant time for that. Football historically has had a bit of a crisis mentality, and we saw that even with the Matildas coach quite recently, right? Only a few months before the tournament, we have to make a big change. It ends up affecting the group and their ability to perform. What is required is a new culture, I think, a culture of unity, and that's why I think the timing is good for all parties, including David. David had lost the confidence, if you like, of a number of stakeholders in the game, and now that the professional game, and he'd fought against the professional game becoming independent, which many of us, and I think the majority of the game, have supported from in fact, day one. Now that that's occurring, it's then David's position actually has changed fundamentally. So I think the timing is good for everyone to move on.
You've got a master's degree in sports management. You have a deep knowledge of the game as a player and as a commentator. Is your hand going to go up?
Look, I just continue to say, I've played a number of roles within the game, player, commentator, you know, CEO and chairman of our Players Association, coach.
All the more reason Wayne might be a good fit there, Craig.
I'm in a position where I'm always happy to help out, but it's more important that the collective, that football reaches its potential in Australia, and I'll tell you why. And why I've spent 20 years since retiring and working in this field is because football connects us to the world. And so it can help us on a whole range of areas, whether it's around minorities, refugees, multiculturalism. That's what we are. That's our DNA in football. And I think this country, as you read out in my open letter to Bill and Scott, that was very much about that, open discussions about the way we treat marginalised people.
Have you copped blowback for taking those stands?
You know what? The truth is, I don't really know because I hardly care, really.
Do you think Australians do have a difficulty with hard conversations about who we are, where we've come from, and the difficult issues within our society and history?
I think we do at times. I mean, look, for instance, there's two on the table here. One is the Indigenous, our Indigenous history, and the second is, you know, how we're treating refugees and asylum seekers right now. And on both aspects, I think there's a tendency from a section of the population to try and avoid having what is an honest discussion.
And when you say treating refugees, you'd like them off Manus Island, off Nauru, and brought to Australia.
And treated humanely.
And what are the dangers of that triggering a resumption of boat arrivals with people drowning at sea and all those other difficult things that go with that?
Yeah, well, that's part of the discussion, right? And so, you know, I think that's why I asked Bill and Scott to bring together the range of organisations around the country and depoliticise it and say, look, there are issues here which have to be managed. But the fundamental values of the country is that you can't treat people inhumanely simply because they are, or for an extremely small cohort, perhaps are not seeking asylum. But for the vast majority being proven to be so, You can't treat them inhumanely in order to deter others. Like, what sort of country is that?
So do you believe that it is entirely legitimate for sports people who have a platform in this sport to talk about issues that concern them? And obviously we're going to drift in towards an Israel Folau type question here, I suppose, that regardless of where the controversy comes from, that sports people are entitled to make controversial statements.
Well, is someone saying that sports people are not entitled to make statements?
Well, they can lose their jobs.
As anyone else can in society. But I do believe that sports people actually have an obligation to try and give back and help on social issues where we have a platform, and to help others by so doing. And
now, does that include for those who have a conservative view of how the world should be as opposed to a progressive one?
Sure, for all. And anyone else in society has the right to their view, but there are limits on that, of course. And that
Do the limits extend to losing your job because you make comments about homosexuals going to hell, to use the...
Well, the Folau case is a more complex one also. So aside from the legalities...
Who gets to speak? Who gets to speak and keep their jobs within a sporting context? That's really the question.
Well, the question is, where does the right to speak cut across between private and employment contract? And the issue around freedom of speech for all of us, and in this country we have that right, but there is a limit to it, and that is where it discriminates against others' rights. Okay? But sports people like, and there's been many in history who've been able to make really significant social change. Matildas are a great example, because you saw Sam Kerr came out recently during the Women's World Cup and talk about the abuse that Sam received when she made some comments after the win against Brazil. And it's important that she feels comfortable to do that, because there's so many other young girls and even women in the country and around the world. She's a global sports figure now, Sam Kerr, who she can influence and she can give strength to, and she can say, I experienced this as well, and this is how we can deal with it. Those things are really important. And when athletes do that, when they're in a position where they don't have to, it's very, I think it's easy. I think it's a path of least resistance for someone like Sam Kerr or any other athlete, to like Megan Rapinoe, to just play the game, take their sponsors' money and say, you know, that's it. That's the only responsibility I have. But all of us have a responsibility, don't we? And athletes are no different. You have a responsibility. And the person who lives next to me, my wonderful neighbours, they all have a responsibility to every day stand up for what it is that they believe in. When athletes do so, the social benefits, I think, can be immense. And if along that, you know, what's happened with Israel Folau, in my view, it's actually brought out what's an important national discussion, how that's being handled with the vitriol and the attacks on all sections, I think is unhelpful. But it's actually an important discussion at this point in time, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether you agree with the actual detail of what Israel's saying or otherwise. The point is that athletes can make huge positive social change.
The year that made you was 1994, you say. Why that year?
94 was important to me because I made a decision to come back to Australia, and to try and achieve the maximum of what I thought I was capable of. And I had gone as a young player, as many young athletes do, and young footballers certainly go to Asia to play. And so the financial rewards and the lifestyle and all these things were incredibly positive. And it would have been very easy to stay there at that time and continue. But I had decided that I wanted to maximise whatever talent that I had, and respect all the contributions of people around me, because athletes don't get there by themselves. Coaches, family in particular, my parents, what they'd done for me by, you know, the amount of driving, the amount of commitment, financial commitment otherwise. My mother had to go back to work. All of these things were in my head, and I had decided that I needed to play for the national team. And I had lucrative contracts on the table in Asia at that time. I was only 24, and I decided to come back, basically throw all that in to come back to Australia to try and achieve something.
Do you regret that at all?
It was the most important decision of my life, because much of what else has happened subsequently, and including what happened, you know, the campaign that you mentioned, I think earlier with Hakeem Al-Arabi, you know, being in the Thai jail, the ability that I had to use my platform to go and help Hakeem and other refugees, it was built off the back of that decision. So I came back to Australia, and I went from a significant level of earnings as a young Australian to almost nothing. And I immediately got some very serious injuries, and I had to constantly be confronted with that question for probably around 18 months. Do I go back, or do I try and achieve? And it's a question that we all face in life. It's not sport or otherwise. It is, am I prepared to take the risk to be my what I would consider, or you would consider, our best selves, to achieve everything that we dream of? Or was I prepared to compromise? And so much of the advice around us in those moments is about the compromise. Look, you'd be mad to do that. You know, you've got a wonderful life, and look at what's happening here, and you're winning this here, and, you know, and why would you possibly do that? Throw it all in. And yeah, I just didn't see it that way.
The urge to compromise. The song you've chosen is All Together Now by the Beatles. Why this one?
Oh, I think it summarises where Australian football is at the moment. You know, my great passion, our beautiful game, what it can do for Australia, what it can do for all of the minorities and all the different cultures in this country. Everyone who arrives with the love of football in their heart, it can take Australia values, Australian culture, Australian Indigenous history to the world. It can make us a more humane, more caring country, in my view. The game has much to offer this country, but to do so, it's going to have to be united. It's going to have to be very much together. So now I think at this point in time in 2019, it's probably a good time to say all together now.
Craig Foster, great to talk to you.
You too.
And here's the Beatles. Is it the greatest Beatles song ever? I'm not too sure. It's called All Together Now. It's a song chosen by my guest for the year that made me Craig Foster.